Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 595. We are back in LA this week with At Midnight. And it's going to be a good week because I believe we're doing a Reno 911 cast reunion this week. So check that out, At Midnight, back in LA. Super fun shows in New York, by the way. Thanks to everyone who took part in that. And we're on At Midnight. How long am I going to keep saying that? I know you know. But it's sort of, you know, my mom does this thing where she's like, okay, wear your seatbelt. I'm like, Mom, I know. I know how to drive. She's like, I know, but if I don't tell you, then I'm not doing my job as a mother. So I guess I'm not doing my job as a podcast mother if I don't repeat things over and over again until you tell me to stop telling you. So I apologize, but it's just sort of the nature of the creature. This episode is Churches, which you may recognize as CHVRCHE.ES, which is their URL, which I believe is España, but it works out very well. Churches. Now, this is a band that we became friends on Twitter. Lauren Mabry, lead singer, they're a Scottish band, and I'd been listening to them on the Sirius XM, and all of a sudden one day I noticed, like, hey, they referenced the Nerdist Podcast, so I realized they were following me, so I just sent them a direct message and said, hey, want to come on the podcast? And Lauren wrote me back and said, sure, we'll be in LA soon. And so that's how it worked out. We recorded this podcast in the tour bus, so it was super cool, like we were on the road, and I saw them at the Tower Theater in LA, and they were fantastic, and Lauren is great, super cool, super funny, very talented, charming, delightful. So their last album, the most recent album, is called The Bones of What You Believe. It's available now. And we tagged a song from that show at the Tower Theater at the end of the podcast. So here we go. The Nerdist Podcast, number 595, with my new friend, Lauren Mabry, a.k.a. Chverches.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
To do shows all the time, so yeah. you don't get to go to Halloween Horror Nights.
No, but I guess we're playing a show technically in Disney World. Is it Disney World or Disneyland?
Disney World's in Florida. Disneyland's here.
Disney World. We're playing the House of Blues in Orlando.
Oh.
Next month. So at first I was like, I'm intrigued because I think I went to Orlando once when I was about 4. And by all accounts, my parents said I was a complete bastard the entire time. So, I think maybe I'll have to go back and exercise those demons because, they were not impressed
and work it out.
With my behavior. I don't remember it. I feel like it's kind of at that crossover point where you know that you were a person and you know that you were you, but I don't feel morally responsible for it.
Right, so you shouldn't still feel guilt.
It's like I didn't have a proper moral consciousness, so
no.
I'm sorry that I was a complete dick.
But you should call your parents afterwards and say, you know, I was really cool this time.
Yeah, I didn't cry when any of the weird people dressed as animals approached me, which I think was a recurring theme.
You know, I think you should have turned it around on them. Maybe you guys should have done a better job and maybe I wouldn't have been that way. You know, do you ever think to spin it around that way?
I thought about it, but there's a lot of early 90s video camera footage of it, and I look at it and I'm like, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah,
being a little asshole there, yeah.
Well, now you get to go back and make it right. Disney World is actually much bigger than Disneyland, so you'll have more space to run around.
We'll see how it goes. I'm nervous.
Do you like rides?
I feel like I used to when I was a kid, but I'm a very anxious adult, so I don't know how that would work. But Martin is very from the band is very, very into rides. He goes on a lot of roller coasters.
Okay.
And whenever we're on a driving day in the van or in the bus, he's always trying to find theme parks on the way and then has to drag at least one person with him. But so far, not me.
You have time to do that?
I guess things are kind of winding down now, so there's a little bit more time between things. But there's always at least 2 days on a tour where you're driving from somewhere really far away, and you just go through really random bumfuck towns that you would never go through.
But that's pretty interesting that you get to see a lot of our country. I've driven around Scotland, and it's fucking amazing.
It is. It is very nice. It's very green. You don't get to see it much. But
oh my god! Yeah, I think years ago, my girlfriend at the time and I rented a car in London, and we drove all the way up through the east side, up through Edinburgh, and then all the way back down. We went up to just before you can get to the Isle of Skye, but we did not take the ferry across, and then back down through Glasgow, and then all
Very
the way
nice.
Back down. It was really, really cool.
See, you've actually been there and seen things. A lot of the time when we speak to people, somebody complimented me, I think last year, we did an interview, and someone complimented me on my English.
Oh, yeah. It's
and
really
I was like,
good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
I was like, I'm going to take that as a compliment anyway, because I do try and expand my vocab.
That's sort of the arrogance of America sometimes. Is like, you speak our language really well. You're like, I think it was our fucking language first, actually.
Well, but then it makes me sound doubly, equally condescending if I'm like, God, I can't believe you don't know that. So, you know, if I'm in the UK and I drive 2 hours left, I'm in the sea. Whereas if you go 2 hours one way, you're still in the same state. So.
That's true. Well, it's... The thing that kept freaking me out was that I didn't have a problem at the beginning driving on the right side of the car, on the left side of the road.
Yes.
But when you start driving for a while, you just sort of forget where you are. And it never ceased to amaze me how much I thought I was going to die when I would see a truck barreling and be like, I'm on the wrong side! And then go, okay, I'm in Scotland.
Everything's fine. Just keep breathing.
Everything's going to be all right. Yeah, I was in Glasgow. I was in Edinburgh last year. I went last year. It's fucking so nice.
It's nice. It's a nice place. For the Fringe? No.
No, I was there. It was a couple months before the Fringe.
I think, yeah, most people that live in Edinburgh will probably tell you that's a better time to go, because I think the Fringe is really awesome, obviously, but
yeah.
I don't know if you get a proper sense of the city.
I always want to go perform at the Fringe, but it's just, I don't have a month to spare, and I know you can go for less time, but I feel like if you're going to do it, you really should do it for
the
full month.
Gotta go do the full thing. Yeah, I guess I've seen a few things on and off over the years, and I worked, used to work for magazines and stuff, so then you kind of see a million shows in a day and run around doing all that, but yeah, it's a very diverse lineup.
I mean, literally, the class system is, the city is designed... Like, the rich people live higher and the poor people lived lower, and they basically just, like, threw buckets of piss on them.
I like the past tense there. It's nice that you used the past tense. I hope,
it's not that
I
way
hope.
Anymore, right? No,
I hope
not.
I don't live there, so I'm not sure. But, I guess the Fringe this year, I got to see Stuart Lee, which was really cool. So, I'd never seen him live before, so...
I was well, and how are you? I mean, listen, not to start delving into
international.
You're
gonna bring it up, aren't you? Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, you are from Scotland, and this did just happen, and you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to.
No, like I guess my kind of hope is that people do something good with what's happened. Like I think the final quote that I read in the Guardian was that 97% of people who were eligible had registered to vote, which is pretty insane. And I guess the average turnout was about 80%-ish in most places, which is pretty ridiculous. So I think if they can channel it into something productive, which creates a more democratic system for the whole of the United Kingdom, then that would be good. Because we don't have like a federal system like you guys do. So representative democracy is going to be good if you can get it. But
well, we don't have to talk about that anymore. But
I survived it.
You survived. No, listen, this is not a hard-hitting podcast. You've listened to the podcast
before. I have, yes.
So, not a hard-hitting podcast. We're just here to make you feel comfortable, learn a little bit about you.
I'm going to take the mic off the stand.
You can take the mic off the stand. Talk in the back of your awesome tour bus, which I've always wanted to do the tour bus tour, but I just fly to a city and perform and then go back home. This just feels like the way to do it.
Well, yeah, we were myself and Kyle were talking about this earlier, and I feel like now I'm excited to see what Kyle looks like, because when Cara, our tour manager, and I were talking about the podcast, she was like, "Oh yeah, and Kyle, the producer's coming. You know, the guy that laughs in the background." And
I was like, "That's it." I know it. It's particularly echoey in this room.
It's nice acoustics for you.
Yeah, it's good. Does Kyle look like what you thought he would look like?
I don't know. I guess I haven't really like tried to sit and like close my eyes and tried to picture him. But
I've described him a lot as a tall hipster walk around Muppet.
Oh. Okay.
So he's sort of, he kind of has this Muppety vibe to him.
It's a little bit of the Chuck,
a little shaggy.
A little bit of the Chuck Klosterman about you.
Yeah.
In there.
But he's got the, you know, but he'll still rock a plaid shirt and cords. So
classic.
He's a sweet guy. We take him out and take him out for walks and feed him once in a while. He does all right.
But yeah, I don't, I feel like I shouldn't fangirl too much, but it's quite exciting.
You should fangirl, please.
But yeah, like I guess a lot of podcasts to listen to on tour. So thank you for that, guys.
Oh, please, of course.
And I think when we started touring, I was familiar with the format of the podcast. You know, I was listening to news podcasts, a bit of Adam and Joe.
Mm-hmm.
You had Adam Buxton on. That was really exciting.
Yes, Adam was great.
But my friend Dave was the one that pointed me onto this, and I feel like I should give him like whatever the Nerdist equivalent of Dropbox upgrade pass on points are for this, because he's told me and I've told like so many other people. So
thank you very much. I am honored. I mean, I've been listening, you know, Sirius XM plays the shit out of you guys, so
yeah.
I've been listening.
They've been very nice.
I've been listening
nice
to you for a while, yeah. And so it's one of the interesting things about social media and the way this all works is that you see someone that you already like and you go, wait, how do they listen to this? What? And so I immediately jumped on that. I'm like, and then just coincidentally, you happen to be in town this week.
It totally worked out.
So how are you? So last night you played at the Palladium?
We did, yes.
But then you broke it up and you're playing at the Tower Theater tonight.
Yes, we were just because for some inexplicable reason, people bought the tickets really fast, so thank you to them. And we thought we would try and put on an extra show, but we didn't really know where to do it, and this seems like a pretty cool place to be doing it.
For some reason, they bought tickets fast. It's because you're popular now.
Yeah.
People like you.
For the time being.
I know. If you have the...
I am a very... pessimism is the way to be, then you won't ever be disappointed. I don't know.
I think the problem can be that sometimes pessimists think that they're being realistic, but when they're actually being pessimistic. But I understand what you mean. Like I guess if you do look at the history of entertainment, sooner or later, if you don't want to do this anymore, you know. But I still think you're quite a ways.
I hope so. I guess it's weird. It's a weird thing because we've all been in bands for so long, and this isn't ever something we really ever anticipated. So
yeah.
Obviously, we're proud of what we're doing and stuff, but I think most days we're like, when's the jig going to be up? Like, when are people going to figure out that we don't really know what we're doing?
But see, that's the thing, is that everyone feels that way.
I hope
like,
so.
Literally everyone feels that, way.
What do they call it? It's like the imposter complex or whatever.
I guess so, yeah. Didn't Jeff Bridges say that too? It's like everyone says
Jeff Bridges, that's not fair. He's Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
But seriously, everyone says that. Everyone kind of feels like, because it's such a strange... It's such a strange thing to think that you could just make something and then other people could relate to it and they could relate to you and they could like you and then it could be a thing and you're like, no, that's other bands. That's not us, you know?
Yeah. Plus, I think maybe, I don't know, maybe when you're like 16, you're like, yeah, my band's the best thing in the world ever and it's going to connect with so many people and it's going to be great. And then you realize it probably wasn't that good. But, you know, you were learning.
Do you have any of the old tapes from when you were 16?
Some of it secretly exists on the internet. But people took a long time to catch on to that. I was like, I think my university band is on there. I think called Boyfriend, Girlfriend. Great name, guys. Great name.
Oh.
I think there's a defunct MySpace page that's lurking around there. But I maintained that for me, that wasn't very... It's not embarrassing because I just play drums on it and do a tiny bit of vocals. And I was like, drumming in a band that kind of sounds a bit like At the Drive-In meets Idlewild. I'm okay with that.
So was it always for you like, I'm going to be in a band no matter what, whether it be playing drums, singing, playing synth, like anything?
I think so. Like, my parents aren't musicians, but I grew up in quite a musical house, and they always encouraged me to play. And, people can ask you, like, when did you decide to give up your day job to become a musician? I'm like, oh, it doesn't really work like that. I guess it's just something you kind of do concurrently as you're working. I think I played piano when I was a kid, and then when I was in high school for the music class, you had to have two instruments, and I didn't I decided I didn't want to sing in the exams, so I was like, oh, I'll learn drums for a year and I'll do that instead. So then I did piano and drums and just did backing vocals in bands.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other band that I'm in at the same time as this, but we don't get to do a huge amount because I'm always away with these guys. I play keyboards and some percussion and do some singing. And then I guess in this I play some keyboards on the record, but this is the first band I've been in where there isn't actually something to hold on to when you're playing live. So there was a lot of like, what to do with my hands?
What did you do? How did you figure it out?
A lot of angst. But I figured out, I hold on to the microphone cable a lot and try and make it look like I'm being very angsty with the microphone cable. But really I'm like, my limbs are just so, they're just hanging. Like,
one of these days someone's going to fuck you over and give you a wireless mic and you're going to go grab a cord and go,
we have had a conversation about that and I was like, we can't do that now. Sorry, we can't. Not yet. But, you know, we grew up in public to an extent with that stuff because we were lucky that people picked up on the band so early.
Sure.
So, you know, we've just been finding our feet and trying to do it, and because we all played however many millions of live shows in other bands, but every band is different, so yeah.
You need like one of those stress dolls that you could just squeeze on stage.
I think so, or just like a little kind of blanket.
A blanket.
That'd be nice, just wrap myself in it.
See,
but I'm trying to
think that's a thing. You could start like a thing.
Yeah, we're trying to. I think I saw this TED talk where this woman was talking about how your body language not only influences what other people think of you, but also what you think of yourself.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if I believe this, but then I tried it for a bit and I was like, she's so true. It's so right.
Okay, like what?
Just that she was like, if you're constantly like kind of hunkering down and apologizing for yourself, then it's going to feed back into your psyche and then that's how you're going to behave. So then it's just like, you know, do the kind of Wonder Woman pose for 2 minutes a day or like just open your arms. And it was like open body language feeds into your psyche, which feeds into your behavior. And I was like, I thought that was going to be hippie-ish, but I think it's kind of useful, so.
Then did you start applying that on stage?
I do it a wee bit before we go on stage, yeah. So I think it helps.
It's weird because your emotional state can affect how you hold your body.
Totally,
but the reverse is true as well. And so it is kind of hard to... I worked for years, like I had a terrible hunch because not only just sitting in front of computers, but just also like that kind of like, no, I suck, you know.
Mm.
And then it really took a long time before I sort of had to start pretending like my shoulders were being pulled by a string back, because otherwise I'd be like this. I'd be like this all the time. Why do you think we're like that as performers?
I don't know.
Isn't it funny that you choose to do the thing?
Yeah. Well, I think I talk to myself all the time, like as an inner dialogue. I'm like, oh, but then people think that you're not very good at it. And I'm like, no, well, then you just have to pretend to be better at it. And I guess it's kind of that thing you were talking about. It's like, if you just have to fake it until... Like, I really enjoy playing live and stuff, but I guess, like, this band has ramped up so quickly.
Yeah.
So I guess every time I'm like, I've got a handle on that, it gets bigger and the stakes get higher. So I was, like, just, like, constantly trick myself into psychologically thinking everything's fine.
Do you think that we get superstitious and we think we have to be like that? Because if you go, no, my band's awesome, then you're like, oh, no, it's all going to fall apart now because I accepted it.
I'm not sure. I guess for me, I think... I've never had like proper like stage training or anything like that, so I guess when we're playing it's pretty genuine representation of what we're like, just a kind of slightly bigger version of that. And I think at first when we started doing this, because I've kind of come from alternative rock background and so have the other guys, we were like, we don't really want to change the way we're doing things because the music is slightly different.
Yeah.
And I think at first people were like, but they're in an electropop band, like she shouldn't be making stupid jokes on stage, like she should be like dancing. And oh man, I love the men, people are like, she should dance more, she should smile more.
Who says that?
Just random dickheads. I don't like, why? I try and not, like, I used to get quite offended by it, and I was like, that's that whole like walking down the street and telling someone to like telling a girl to smile, sweetheart, and stuff like that.
Right.
But and I was like, if I was a guy, you wouldn't say that to me. No one tells Tommy Hart to smile, really? Do they? Not now.
No. No,
he's made them respect that he's in his area.
Yeah,
but
well,
maybe they did at the start. Sorry, kicking you under the table.
I do. We're playing footsie.
Oofed.
I do. I have been told that before by people in public because I think my natural face is sort of just because I'm in my head a lot.
Just thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, and then people are like, "Hey, buddy, cheer up," and you always want to go, "Fuck you."
You don't know what's happened.
Yeah, exactly. You don't know me, and I know if you were to tell them to fuck off, they'd be like, "I was just trying to be like, yeah, but you're pinning your idea off onto me, and that's not right."
So I guess that, and then the whole she should dance more thing. I think I remember seeing some we try and be active on the social networks, but I think there's certain points where certain things have happened, and I'm just gonna let that one sit for a couple of days. And we'd been on the Jimmy Fallon show,
yeah,
just a couple months ago, which was really exciting. And then I was like, oh, I'm gonna like just reply to a message that somebody sent me, and then I was like, I'll have a little look, will I? And then I clicked the at button and I was like, mistake.
abort. Yeah. Backpedal.
This parachute is a knapsack. It was awful.
I'm in midair.
Yeah.
It's
and then
full
also,
forks.
And then obviously that I think it's just like human nature, isn't it? You see however many nice things, but you remember the smaller number of nasty things.
Of course.
And people were like, she needs to get more presence, otherwise this band's going to go fucking nowhere. And then I was like, God, what? Just on the goddamn television.
I know. Well, that's because, you know, the one negative comment, it's harder for us to accept the positive comments. You're like, yeah, that doesn't. And but the one negative comment just is, it just chews at our insecurity.
Well, part of me was like, maybe I buy into those more because I think, was it there's a scene in Girls or something, and Lena Dunham's character is like, all the awful things that you could possibly say to me, I've said however many times to myself already today. And I was like, I know that was meant to be funny, and it is funny in a kind of dark way, but it's probably true. So maybe when you hear something about yourself, it feeds into all those things that you silently, secretly wonder about in the dark of night.
Of course, or just all day, in the light of day as well.
But then I pretend not to, so it's fine. And I don't smile at people in the street, just in case.
No, well, it's funny. I think New Yorkers are much more accustomed to that. You know, you go to different parts of the country. It's like in the South, if you're walking around, I think you're very likely to hear that from someone because people are very, you know, they like to connect with people and they're very friendly.
It's nice. See, maybe it's me. I'm being an asshole. No. I was just trying to be nice.
Just like Disney World.
Just again.
Was that what you were doing? You weren't smiling at people at Disney World?
I think it's possibly because I come from a colder country. I was struggling to deal with the heat.
Sure.
I was an ungrateful 4-year-old child that didn't realize this is a really great opportunity that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
You can't explain that to a child. And
no.
Now I think my mom kind of said, she was like, when you were a kid, you were like really carefree until a point, and then you became really worried all the time.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know. And then I feel like now maybe I was like trying to find a balance between these two things. But now, yeah, the intense guilt complex where now I'm like, oh, an ungrateful child. It's so awful.
You know, that's the worst part is that you feel bad about something, and then you start feeling bad for feeling bad. And then it's just this like
spiral.
Layer cake
spiral.
Of bullshit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the truth of the matter is that I think you might as well enjoy it.
May as well try.
You might as well enjoy the moment while it's happening, because it's pretty fucking amazing. It's pretty cool. I mean,
so I'm going to go back. I'm going to purge the demons.
You're going to go back. This is your return trip to Disney World is going to absolutely.
It's on my birthday, actually.
When's your birthday?
It's on the 7th of October, so we're playing in Orlando. And then maybe, I don't know, Cara, our tour manager, was like, what do you want to do for your birthday? And I was like, play a show, I guess.
Okay, so if you're able to, let's make a deal. If you're able to purge the demons,
I don't want any of the people in the animal costumes to touch me. I'm sorry,
they don't.
It's still weird. I don't want them to do that.
Just this weird goofy costume coming up, going, "Why don't you dance more?"
It's very like, sinister.
Leave me alone. Yeah,
it's very sinister.
They're very sinister. But I want to know. I want to know if you feel free after your return trip to Disney World.
I'll have to. Yeah, I feel like I owe it to my parents. Or maybe I'll just like completely regress. And act exactly the same. I really hope not.
Oh, it'll go downhill. So what are some of the moments, like what are some of your holy shit, I can't believe we're doing this moments recently?
It's been quite a lot of them, to be honest. I guess because we've been doing this quite constantly,
yeah.
It's quite hard to get a certain perspective on it. So maybe at the end of the year when we're not doing it as much, it'll be easier to tell. But stuff like Coachella is pretty mad, because I've never been to that festival, but I've read about it so much. And we turned up to play, and I think our friend Rachel took a photo from the back of the stage, and you can see, I was like, there's definitely people there. There's definitely a lot of people there. And that was kind of a weird one. And yeah, I guess I was saying to Kyle before you arrived, I've only ever been in a band that's done like toilet tours of the UK and like a couple of indie festivals in Europe.
What's a toilet? So, oh, a toilet tour. Like,
oh, just like, not actually playing in toilets,
sure.
But just, you know, like kind of grimy venues.
Right.
So, like there was a horrible time when we slept on a stage in a venue because the house we were supposed to be staying in fell through and we didn't know what to do. So we went back to the venue and the promoter had gone. So we were like, okay, we'll just stay here, I guess. So it's definitely camping. We're definitely doing better now. So I think it's just important to appreciate those things and not become a shuddering arsehole.
I think it's funny. I think you're too worried about becoming an asshole. You're not going to become an
there's
asshole.
There's too many assholes.
No,
in the
world.
Plus, it's really bad when you. I don't know. Maybe you just know loads of really nice people, but I think it's weird now when you start to meet people whose work you really, really love. And I'm really worried about the day that I meet someone that's an asshole about it. Because so far, I've been really lucky to just meet people who are incredibly nice.
Most people are incredibly nice.
But well, I worry about that one moment, that whole don't meet your heroes moment, where you'll see somebody doing something horrible about, like, you know, throwing something in someone's face and be like, I said unsalted almonds! And you're like, no, not you!
Yeah.
I don't want that.
It's possible it could happen, but for the most part, I think, you know, I think you'll be okay. Or, you know, maybe we've just been lucky enough to see people faking it and just seeing, like, their public side.
Plus, I think it's weird for us now because we try and be not that guy. You know, that guy that's
yes.
Backstage at the festival and then it's bothering people. I'm like, I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
But then occasionally you'll see someone and you'll be like, oh, don't look. Stay still. Revision is based on movement. Stay still.
I'll tell you, there's no... And it never gets any easier. And, no matter what level of people you talk to, they also have people...
Plus, everyone's just, it's kind of weird when you have that moment of realization where you're like, everyone is just a person. We're all just people. And I think it's weird... I think especially in the States, kids wait outside shows for us and stuff. And I think that's... I'm like, don't get so excited. Everything's fine. But it's so nice. But at the same time, I'm like, that's insane that they're so, like, excited... to talk to us. We're just idiots. Like, we're lucky enough that we get to do something we really love to do, but it's kind of like, I'm like, that's how excited like I would get about like Deftones or Radiohead or something.
Sure.
When I was like 16, 17, I'm like, that's insane.
I've told the story on the podcast before, but I have to tell you, I had a really bad experience with Tom York once.
Oh no.
But it
that's
was
how it's like, see, partly I'm like, it makes me feel good, because if you had like an experience where you were just like high-fiving and like,
I can't imagine Tom York high-fiving.
No.
You'd hold up your hands to high-five. You'd be like, up top, Tom York. I'd be like...
Yeah. You'd probably leave you hanging, but in the name of anti-capitalism or something.
I think, I've heard he's gotten a lot better about that stuff now, but I think I caught him... This was a long time ago. You were but a wee poppy.
I was probably just being a little asshole at Disneyland.
You were being a little asshole at Disneyland when I was working at K-Rock in the 90s.
Oh, of course.
And we were doing it was an acoustic Christmas show, and it was, this is to tell you how long ago it was. It was between the Bends and OK Computer.
Ah, interesting time, though, in hindsight.
And he was supposed to be interviewed by another DJ or something, and I came backstage, and they were like, hey, do you want to interview Radiohead? And I was like, well, of course I do. And I don't know. He was mad about something. So we hadn't even started, and he just stood up and went, this interview's over. And then he, like, stormed out. And then I tried to smooth it over with him later that night, and he just was not in a... he just wouldn't talk to me. I didn't do anything. He was mad about something else, but...
If he ever hears this podcast back, I don't think that impression's going to get you any points either.
I've already put to bed the fact that I'm ever going to be friends with Tom York, so I think... I don't know if we'll ever...
Well, I rewatched... Meeting People Is Easy on the plane, because I think I started thinking about it after I listened to the Adam Buxton podcast,
yes.
And you guys were doing the Radiohead nerd out, which I really appreciate.
You know what? And that's how much I love Radiohead, is I fucking still love them.
Yeah, and I was thinking, I was like, I haven't watched that since, can't even think when, so I was like, I'll get it, and I'll watch it on the plane. And Martin, my bandmate, was like, why are you watching this? It's so depressing. But he's one of the biggest Radiohead fans I've ever met, and we were talking about it afterwards, and we were like, isn't it weird, like, watching that now? Like, obviously, we're not anywhere near as... incredible as Radiohead, but just in terms of like the things that happened in that documentary that we've now technically done, I'm like, that's insane. Like, we did the Letterman, and the stage manager guy was a bit intense and quite pushy and not very helpful, and I was like, hey, it happened to them too. But then also I was watching it and I was like, yeah, in a weird way, a lot of the themes and stuff that he struggles with, I'm like, that probably does happen to a lot of people once they get to a certain point. And you can, it's kind of a weird time to watch it, because you can see that he's totally trying to come to terms with what's happening and how to be or something.
Well, you know, the story that I heard about, the, you know, the song How to Disappear Completely?
Yes.
Is it? Maybe. Kyle, who's...
That's the one.
Okay. I had heard that song was based on a conversation that he had with Michael Stipe right when Radiohead was getting really famous, and of course, if Tom York is listening, he can confirm or deny this to himself.
It's all speculation.
It's all speculation. Yeah. But let's just say that in this, you know, in this legendary story, that that Tom said to Michael Stipe, you know, how do you deal with it? And Michael Stipe basically said, I shut my eyes and I just say, I'm not here. I'm not here. This isn't really happening. And so basically that's what I heard where that song came from. Came from? That's where song came from.
It's all got very like Borat right here. But I think that's
mixed in with Elmo.
All
right, Jar Jar.
Music came from a bad place.
That's a bad era.
That really hurts.
Tried to make a Star Wars reference on stage yesterday, and it just
okay. Make it now, because you'll
bombed.
Be fine.
Well, I just was saying that the way that the Palladium is laid out when we were standing in the middle, because there's people kind of around the sides and around the back. I was like, it's kind of like the Imperial Senate. And that Ian and I were like, am I right? Yeah,
right?
Like
seriously,
laughing about
great.
It. And I think like 8 people in the venue were like, totally right on.
But can I tell you something? Those 8 people loved the shit out of that reference.
I hope so.
But that's what's not, that's almost so. What's kind of not fair about what you do is that some people, that like out of context, like in any other context, people would be like, oh, she's making a joke. But when people are in like music mode, sometimes it's hard for them, I think, to break out of that when they see a band.
Plus, possibly, kind of what we were saying earlier, I suppose if there's a band that you would not expect to do that, it would be like, oh, she's a serious girl singer in front of serious electro band. And then in between songs, they're like, so I was talking to this guy. And they're like, what? No.
I'm telling you.
None of this chat.
And you're like, New York and LA are different, am I right? And you just start doing stand-up in between.
Awful, yeah.
Like, just 20 minutes
of
stand-up.
I don't think I would survive it.
No, I think that's great. And I hope you don't stop doing that. Because I think the more you do it, the more people will end up like figuring out what's actually happening, and they'll love
it.
And it's your personality.
I try and tell myself that the reason people think that you should behave a certain way is because that's what they know already. If you know what I mean? So they want you to fit into the box that already exists. But I kind of feel it already exists.
But that's what's so weird about, especially what you do with music, is that an individual audience member will take such ownership over what you do because it affects them in a very personal way. And so then it sort of is like, well, this is my thing, and my thing is not being expressed the way that I expect my thing to be expressed. And so it's almost like, you know, and it's not your fault, but on a certain level, it's almost like you're fucking with their house in a weird way, even though it's your thing, but they make it their thing.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. And I suppose I think we try and not think about stuff like that too much, because I think if you start trying to please one person,
oh,
then
you can't.
It'll never.
It's impossible.
You just have to put the blinkers on and keep going.
It's impossible. You have to, you know, you have to do what you like to do, and you know, if you take a step and someone's like, I don't like that, then they were on the fence and they weren't gonna stick around anyway. Like if you make one joke, you're like, I'm never gonna go. Like they weren't gonna stick around anyway, because that shouldn't.
Yeah.
That's not someone who's really getting what you're doing. And do you really want them around if they don't really get you?
Yeah, I guess it's a weird thing, because I guess for us, when we're writing it, we're like, this is ours. But once we put the record out, I'm like, to an extent, I suppose this sounds really full profound, but like I kind of feel like the ownership transfers.
Absolutely.
So it's like it belongs, like those people have made it their own, they have their own associations, so what it means to me, it doesn't mean to them, and it will be different. So,
yeah, and they probably, you know, they probably pick up on different musical hooks than you pick up on. They pick up on different lyrics and other lyrics that you want them to really get. It just sails right past their head.
What would Michael Stipe do?
He would say, I'm not here, this isn't happening, I'm not here. And then they wouldn't be REM anymore.
Yeah, but I like that bit in the documentary as well, where they're like, guys, do you have your passes? And he's like, well, I'm fucking Michael Stipe, and this is Tom York, so no.
So that's our passes?
But that makes me feel better too, because I get, I feel like I get that quite a lot at venues where people seem to not so much now, but yeah, I remember last summer I'd gone into the hallway of a venue outside the dressing room to speak to somebody on Skype, and I was just kind of crouched down in the hallway, and somebody came up and was like, where's your pass? And I was like, oh shit, it's like in my bag. And then I was like, can I go to the dressing room and get it? And he was like, obviously that's what you would say if you had, didn't have a pass, you want me to let you into the band's dressing room to get it. No way. And I was like, oh God. And my friend was on the phone and it was just really awkward trying to like discreetly be like, my face is my pass, without like saying that and sounding like a total prick. And I was like, I think I was like dressed for the gig and I had like glitter on my face. I was like, I don't want to just dress like this for fun. Like, that's insane.
I highly recommend I Pay Your Salary. That's a good one.
Oh, I couldn't. I'm way too British. I can't deal with that. So I think I had to, like, I was like, oh, what can you go get someone? And I felt like I was in trouble at school or something, and I had to phone our manager and get him to come get me.
Oh, yeah. It's
it is embarrassing.
It is hard because you don't want to. It just feels too much of drifting into "Don't you know who I am?" land. But
oh, worst. Sometimes, worst.
But I have been in situations where I've had to say, like, I'm supposed to be on stage in 10 minutes, and when I'm not on stage after they introduce me, will that prove that I am who I say I am?
Oh, I hate it. Even like yeah, if we go places and I don't really. I feel like I generally do all the same stuff that I've always done. I don't really do a huge amount of fancy, shiny things now.
Yeah.
But if you ever do go anywhere and something is booked under the band name or something, then I'm like, ugh, I don't want, oh God, I don't want to say it. And then I kind of say it like in a kind of weird, like, like try not to say it. I'm like, it might be under Laura Mever. And they're like, no, it's not there. And I'm like, oh, it's under
Churches.
And I'm like, why do I sound like constipated while I'm saying this? It's awful.
Well, we don't have a Churches, like, but we have a Chvuches.
Yeah, that would seem like a great idea at the time, didn't it?
I'll tell you why it's a great idea. In this internet age, you never would have gotten churches.com.
Nope.
And now you get chvur.es. You have a Spanish domain.
We did. But that was because somebody bought all the straight up churches.chvurches.com.co.uk, everything, and then tried to extort us for them. He was like, I want this amount of money and also unlimited AAA passes for any band shows ever. And I'm like, what? That's going to be an awkward interaction after he's trying to, like, bribe us. I don't know. So, I think it was the lady that works at our management company that had the brainwave, and she was like, wait, we just moved the dot.
And it's brilliant.
It totally worked.
We have a very special guest here at the show tonight. Our extortionist has come all the way from...
Thank you so much for doing that.
I'll be watching you later tonight. Oh, no, please.
Please don't. Please stay away. Yeah.
Do you find... I'm always interested to hear how dating is when you're in a band all the time. Is that impossible?
I feel it's difficult to an extent to... I mean, like, in some ways, your social life is great because we met so many great people when we've been touring, but... I think it is a measure of the people that you're friends with, those people or our partners and things when we're at home. FaceTime's good, isn't it? That's useful. So you can actually try and remember what people look like. But yeah, I guess it's just trying to adapt. And I suppose it's not necessarily like we're not even off the road for a huge amount of time most of the time. You get like 2 days at home here and there, and then it's like, quick, let's bond with everybody really intensively for 48 hours. But yeah, we do what we can, and everyone's very understanding. I guess as of December time, we're probably going to take I don't know. I can't even say how many months off, but we're going to go back and take a bit of time for a nap and start writing and see. So then maybe we'll see if anybody's personal relationships are still intact. We'll see.
I mean, it's hard. It is sort of the sacrifice with the kind of lifestyle that we lead. You know, you have to... You just have to find it's hard to find the right person who, and you know that your life is difficult. And if they have the same type of life, then their life is difficult too. And then it's just like, okay, I could see you on the 10th of October. Oh, you're not going to be in town because you're okay.
Especially if you at the time you're like, wouldn't it be a great idea to date another creative person? What a great idea, because then we'll get each other on that level and it'll be amazing. But then when people are working at the same time or touring at the same time, then you're like, oh man. That's difficult. It's difficult for everybody with any long distance thing, I guess. But
it is. But it's also the catch-22 of dating other creative people is that they do get what you do, but they also have a lot of the same hang-ups that you have, and that's very tricky. Yeah. But you can't. But dating a non-creative person, if you're trying to talk to them, you're like, but I have all these, and I don't mean like. I mean, I'm sure they're creative in their own ways, but I mean creative.
Yeah, we don't
want to
be patronizing.
Yeah, they're creative in the way
they
that
can't
you're
possibly understand.
But let's just say, you know, if you're dating someone that doesn't work in this field and they don't. And they're like, yeah, I'm not interested in the creative arts. that trying to explain, like, oh, but this is why I love doing this thing. And they're just like, uh-huh, well, I'm happy for you, you know. Like, that's that's sort of difficult, too.
And I think I've kind of tried, like, tried a bit of both. And it's hard to say which works better or which worked worse. Because I guess I've done, like, do I want to tell that story? I don't know. No, I was just, like, somebody that I was kind of dating when we started this band. We had a lot in common in terms of creative goals and our ethics about how we would conduct ourselves in music and things like that. But then that definitely became a contentious issue as our band started to do other things. I'm not sure if it was a competitive thing or it was just, it was quite a weird one. And I think it's just strange, like, you can know people very well, you've known people for however many years, but they have a definite, as soon as certain things start happening, some boxes are ticked for people and they're like,
absolutely,
buttons get pushed, and it's quite weird. I was like, but we have pretty much the same outlook on these things. And as soon as it's perceived that you were doing a certain thing, that whole like sellout thing happens. And like, to me, I was like, I guess the idea of a sellout is somebody who sells their morals or ethics down the river in order to make money. And I was like, I have never done that at any point.
Yeah, the concept of making money does not make you a sellout. It just means you're getting paid to do the thing that you do so you can do more of it. Selling out is violating, it's exactly what you said, it's violating your core belief system for some type of personal gain. That's selling out.
Yeah, and I think I was like, but that cuts me to my core because I spend all this time worrying about this. I have to like do like so many breathing exercises to deal with all the worry about, like, we have to do this right, we have to protect the project, we have to do it in the best possible way, and just, you know, try and be good people about it, but make sure that, I guess, to an extent you have to play the game in inverted commas, but don't play the game in a way that makes you feel really uncomfortable. Later I'll worry about this less.
I think you just need to, I mean, it is it can be very complicated, but I think when you strip it all down, ultimately you should enjoy what you're doing, and you should pursue things that are fun, and you should do things that make you happy, that do what you want to do. And, you know, it's so easy to get very result-oriented, you know, like, oh, if then, it's just like all that if then, if I do this, then this thing happens. And it's like, you know, most things will be fine.
Plus, I guess, but then it was like, it's a lot of speculation and dialogue you've made up in your own head before it's happened. I'm like, no, if we do that, then that won't be that. No, we can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? They just created this alternative reality that doesn't exist.
And most of the time, it's not going to exist.
Mm.
And you'll be fine. So as long as you're having fun, and as long as you can stay present enough to enjoy, you know, the accomplishments. I mean, this is a tremendous accomplishment.
It's really sweaty.
It's very sweaty. It's so sweaty.
Really nice bus. We had to turn off the air conditioning.
I know. Well, they should close the door so the air conditioning. You can open the door. You can open the door if you want. We'll get some air in here.
Behind the music there.
Oh, there it is. Here comes the air. I love seeing all of the sleeping cubicles. I've always wanted to do that. It looks so cozy.
Oh, it's quite cozy. It's quite coffin-esque, to be honest, because there's no natural light in there at all, so when you wake up it is quite disorienting.
I love that.
And it's good for watching films and TV, because it's like a complete personal cinema, isolated, but sometimes it can go a bit wrong. I feel like my tour viewing needs to be balanced.
Mm-hmm.
I like to watch, you know, a lot of documentaries, but also other things, because you can't have a good bit of both.
You gotta spread it out.
A bit of both. I don't know how anyone will feel about this, but secretly kind of into Supernatural.
Supernatural's a great show.
Oh, okay, good. Because I get a lot of funny looks about it on the bus. They're like, no, she's watching Supernatural again. No.
Mm.
And I'm like, what about, like, I love a good bit of lore.
You love,
know?
Sam and Dean and Castiel, and group.
I once played a drinking game with a friend where we would take a drink every time. It was in the series one. Take a drink every time they mentioned Dad. Like, what about Dad? Dad would want us to do this. And every time, woof, it is potent.
You got drunk real fast.
Yes. But I was watching one the other day. I don't know what series it is. Kind of early, I think. And they're in a haunted asylum, which, first off, terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's a terrible thing that they would do to people with mental health problems, but also really scary.
And fucking haunted. Like, asylum.
Scary.
Scary. A haunted asylum.
And I was in the bunk, and I had the computer next to the wall, so the curtain of the bunk is behind me, just to paint a picture for people.
Yes.
and I think Kara had been shouting on us, but I had my headphones on. She just wanted to ask me a question, which is completely fine. But I was watching it, and it was just at a point where the girl is in the asylum. She's very scared and very worried, and you see this, like, it's, the camera's pointing at the back of her head, and you see like the spirit's hand going out. It's just about to touch her on the shoulder, and at that exact point, Kara put her hand through the curtain of the bunk to be like, "Mabes," and then I didn't take that very well.
At all. And you can, if you sit up really fast, then you're it's like face right into the.
Well, she said I made a very guttural sound. She was like, it wasn't even like, "Oh, I'm still sore." I was like, "Ugh." And then she said it was a look of actual panic. I was like, "Why would you do that?" I was like, "Is that 4D?" I don't
know. Not during Supernatural, yeah. No. It is 4D. That's the fourth dimension of entertainment happened. Watching.
So that was intense.
See, I feel like. Now, look, I don't know if there's any room, but if you need a melodica player in the band, I don't.
You do that.
I don't
do
take
do
up that. A lot of space, and I could just like sleep down there and
just squeeze in the bottom.
I'll squeeze in the bottom. I'll quit
we
all the shows.
We could work in like an Alanis Morissette cover or something to get a little bit of melodica in there.
You work. Guys, by the way, I heard a great cover that you guys did of "I Will Die for You."
Ah, thank
which is
you.
Fucking we're awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess radio stations in the UK oftentimes want you to do covers when you do sessions. So, yeah, we did that. But I guess we had to put the covers on ice for a bit because I think we were getting a bit of a reputation, which is great that people really like them. But at the same time, I was like, "Ooh, you don't want to be that band that's got one record and 25 covers."
And a bunch of covers.
Yeah, it's not good.
Because then you're a cover band.
Yeah. But yeah, and I think we did a acoustic in inverted commas cover of an Arctic Monkeys song for a radio station in Australia, and be still my heart. There was a moment where somebody told us they'd read an interview with the band where someone had asked them about it, and apparently he said something. Alex Turner said something along the lines of, "Churches. Oh, is that the band with the guy that's always banging on that little black box?" I don't know if that's word for word correct. I was like, that's not how I imagined it would go. But at least I'm on the radar.
Hey, he's heard of us, I think.
Like, yes, he likes me.
I don't know.
Yeah, so that's a bit weird. And I think that's one of those ones, like, where they walked. I saw them walking around at Lollapalooza, and I was like, "Don't look at them." Also, I was like, "Martin, get out of the way." I was like, "You're like, get away with the box. Move. Like, stop doing that."
You should have screamed across him. "Hey, Alex, this is the guy that bangs in the fucking box."
Yeah. There's some kind of, that's what she said, pun there, but I don't know where that's going.
You know, I am constantly marveled that the she in that scenario is a monster.
Mm.
That's what she said. What a monster she is. She is up to all sorts of no good activities. What's, how do you guys... Do you guys interact at all when you're in the bus on the road, or does everyone just sort of shut into your own cocoons?
I think it depends on the day. I guess I feel like we've all learned an awful lot in the last couple of years about people skills.
Mm-hmm.
Reading people, it's pretty important. And I guess sometimes, because you do live like on top of each other, you never, other than when you get a shower in the day room, the day hotel room, you pretty much are with each other all the time. So
yeah.
Sometimes people just need a minute to have their own thoughts. But sometimes we do some communal viewing in the back lounge, which is quite good. And a guy that's supporting us on this tour, a guy called The Range, he's a really lovely guy, and revealed the other day that he has the Paramore documentary on his computer that I don't think was released in the UK, so Martin and I have never seen it, and we were like, "Oh man, we have to play that now." And we're like, "No, we have to play a show, we have to calm down, everyone's fine." So I think we're going to watch it tomorrow, but now we've been thinking about it for like 3 days, and I'm like, I want to hear the live vocal, I bet they're all really nice, and getting really intense about it, so... It's a bit weird, isn't it?
No, that's not at all.
And True Detective. We did True Detective communally on tour as well. So we would wait in every week, and then we were like, "Okay, we can watch
now
it."
Now you can watch.
So, yeah, it was pretty tense. And I'm terrible. I'm awful with twists. In a way, I think it's nicer for me. Like, people that can see twists coming, I'm like, "You're very smart, but I feel bad for you." But I never, like, I like to be reasonably okay in the brain department.
Right.
But I never see it coming at all. And when things happen, I'm like, "Oh, believe this."
But that's the greatest way to be able to watch things.
Yeah, like even I went to see Shutter Island at the cinema with a friend, and he was like, when the twist happened, which I won't say just in case someone somewhere.
Oh, I will, because fuck, you know, that fucking twist was like, really? Everyone was play acting the entire fucking movie for this guy. And by the way, if you haven't seen Shutter Island yet, it was not important enough to you, so fuck you, that's your fault. Okay, that was a side note.
You can say that, I can't.
No,
it's your podcast.
No, you can
shout at them,
yeah,
if you want. I don't
want to. I can take the mountain of hate of like, hey, you suck, man, you're a douchebag. How could you say that? I was waiting to surprise my wife with Shutter Island. Shutter
I
Island.
I would choose something else.
That was one of those, like, oh, come on twists,
well,
for me.
And I think my friend who I went to see it with, Dave, of Podcast Recommendation,
yes,
fame,
thank you, Dave.
Was like, are you actually kidding? I could tell from the trailer that that's what was going to happen. And then I was like, well, that just makes you really intelligent.
Well,
at the bit, I was like, oh, but does that mean that there's and I just, there's no.
If it makes you feel any better, I didn't see the twist coming, but I was mad at it.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's fair. And I suppose that came out kind of kind of around the same time as Inception, did it?
It
was roughly similar.
It was,
time
I think,
period.
It was. Was it the next movie after Inception?
And then the bit at the end with the spinning. Whoosh, I remember I went with a friend who's from Newcastle in the UK, and I remember her saying really loudly, "Oh, you're joking!" Just as the credits went, she was like, "Oh, what?" And she was really angry about it loudly in the cinema in Glasgow. And I think a lot of people were like, "She's right." Yeah, I thought that was annoying. But whenever Michael Caine is sad, I am sad.
Michael Caine?
Oh my god, yeah. I can't deal with it. Like whenever he's like the sorry, I let you down, Batman situation was very upsetting.
See, you know, in fucking in Dark Knight Rises, he cries in every scene. I'm sorry, I let you down. Bruce, I tried to raise you like a father.
So
like, every
sad.
Scene was like, I did the best I could. And it's like,
he
what
did.
The fuck? What are they?
He did. It is so, I don't know.
He was blubbery Alfred in that one.
I feel like in the same measure that I don't see twists coming, I get very, very, I don't know if you picked up on this from this podcast, I'm quite sensitive. I try and carry it off with a reasonable amount of humor.
Sure.
But oof, when films and like TV happens, I'm like, I'm so invested in this. and I'm like, they're like, we've been watching it for 10 minutes. How can you care that much about those characters? And I'm like, but just imagine. Imagine it was you.
Now, what do you think is the most... If you were not you, what do you think is the most ridiculous movie that you've cried at?
Oh, I don't know. Let me think. I cried a lot of things. I remember... what's it called? It's got Felicity Jones in it, and the chap, Anton Yelchin, was it? The guy that was in Star Trek reboots... Can't remember what's it called. It's about
let's find out.
Why can't I think of the name of it? I went to see it in the cinema like on an afternoon because I had like a multiplex card thing, and it's like she's gone to America she goes back without a visa, and then they have to be like separated, and it's really sad.
Kyle, are you finding
help
this?
If I get, I'm blaming jet lag brain.
Jet lag brain.
But
bad.
I remember being like. Genuinely, like, it was very difficult to get through that experience, and I was like, "This is so sad." Yes. Oh man. Like,
are you okay? Do you need a tissue?
Like, I just remember finding it really upsetting, and then I watched it again on DVD, and now in hindsight, I'm like, "Well, technically, she's got a good job in London now, and she can't go back because she's now like on the blacklist for the visas." But he builds furniture. He could build furniture in London. Why didn't he just go? And I'm like, "Oh, what?" And I remember like just like. Empty cinema in the afternoon, just like open mouth, like I find it like so sad.
Yeah, it's sort of like in X3 where you're supposed to be really sad that Wolverine's got to kill Phoenix when he's basically just standing on a pile of the shit that could cure her mutant power and save everyone. Why doesn't he just make her not a mutant anymore and be like, "All right, let's get out of here"?
But even like I also got laughed at a lot for crying at the part where. Not in that film, but when James McAvoy's like, "I can't feel my legs."
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, "Oh, no." And I was like,
"The end of First Class."
I was like, "This is very important in terms of the plot, but also I was like, oh, it's very upsetting for you personally."
Yes, well, I mean,
it is.
Not only just that he couldn't feel his legs, but
it's like, you've been betrayed.
By his oldest friend.
And yeah, like, people were like, "It's, you know, don't be upset by that. Like, calm down." And I was like, it's the human core of the film. I'm not going to feel bad about that.
Yes, yes. Magneto was on a at the core of it a good cause, but just expressing it in a bad way, and he paralyzed his best friend by deflecting the bullet into his spine.
I feel like there's some kind of Scottish referendum parallel there. I don't know where it is.
By the way, there's a fucking shit ton of mutants running around, and if you watched the most recent one,
I did. Yes.
Okay, so there's a. there's a mutant that basically can send people's consciousness back into time, kind of like Quantum Leap.
That was, yeah.
But
was
no one can, like, fix someone's spine. Like, there's got to be some crazy spinal surgery mutant power. So, like, there's a mutant for everything.
Plus, I guess it's one of those ones where it's better to not ask questions. I've kind of noticed films with, like, time travel-y kind of situations. I'm like, either you shouldn't explain it at all, and we all just kind of sign up.
Yeah.
And we believe. But then once you kind of start explaining, I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, that doesn't seem like that, but, And then, not that I know a huge amount about the physics of it, but...
Listen, I'm the biggest Doctor Who fan in the world, but if you start...
unravel it. Don't pull the thread.
If you start kind of going, well, why is that a fixed point in time? And that, you know what? I'm just going to be okay with it.
I think I'm completely terrible with names today, but the Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Bruce Willis time travels. Looper, yes. I like that there's technically a point where they kind of almost bring it up and they're about to talk about it. And then he's like, oh, we're not going to talk about that. And then they just move on. And I was like, I'm glad because it's probably not going to, we're going to start picking it apart. And I don't want to do that. I just want to enjoy it as it is.
Yes. And also, can we mention Peter Capaldi representing Glasgow as the Doctor nicely right now?
Yes. And it's quite... I like watching it because I can just remember his character from The Thick of It.
The Thick of It, yeah.
I'm like, at what point is is the Doctor going to start saying really, really intensely awful but very creative things to people?
And the TARDIS is taking off and he says, fuckity bye! And then, whoa!
Yep. That's just how he neutralizes all these situations, to just be with a really horrible, horrible slagging.
I knew I was going to love him. The very first line of his in The Thick of It, and please forgive my terrible Scottish accent, is him going,
I'm excited.
That's about as useful as a marzipan dildo. And that nugget of gorgeousness made me fall in love with him. Teach me how to do the perfect Scottish accent.
Oh, I don't know. Well... I think you should meet our front of house guy. He's got one of the best Scottish accents. Like, I can understand him. We can all understand him fine. But whenever he speaks to people in America, they're like, like, they just can't.
What are you saying?
They can't get him at all. And his name is Paul Gallagher, but people shorten his name to Gal because it's the beginning of his second name. But when he says that to people, they're like, like, what? Gaw. They just can't, like,
they turn into crows,
tilt their head like a confused dog, and we're like, no, Gal, and they're like, gaw, and I'm like, oh, it's not a real name, I'm sorry. So we're just like, guy, front house guy.
Guy, Scott, guy, Paul,
glasses, it's fine,
don't worry about it.
But yeah, that would be quite, you should record that, like, kind of in a world style, follow people around, record the voices, and then practice.
Yes,
so that would work,
so that I can come back and not embarrass myself.
Yep. And then you would get away with your saying really awful things and be like, it was my Peter Capaldi impression. It's fine. It's my Malcolm. It's my Malcolm.
I was just
Tucker.
Doing lines from The Thick of It. It's not. Yeah. It's not what you think it is.
I don't know how people, like, I guess with all stuff like that, if there's any improv involved, I don't know how people keep straight faces when that's happening. I'm like, how did you come up with these awful, awful things you've just said? Like, ridiculous.
Would you ever want to do any acting or anything?
I don't think I'd be very good at it, to be honest. I know we just talked about how I'm so emotional, but I would need to be, like, fed the thing to be emotional about, and then they'd be like, go, like, wind her up like a spinning top, and then be like, oh, crying scene. But no, I don't think I'd be very good at it, to be honest. I don't think I've ever really tried, so that's defeatist, isn't it?
That is. But if it's not something that calls to you, then it's not really that important, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like, I guess I can, like, we're all massive film fans in the band, but I don't know, like, maybe it's just something I should enjoy from a distance without taking away the mystery.
Have you ever thought about ultimately what it is, like, what do you want? Like, what do you want to do? Are you doing it now, or is it just more of this, or are there other things?
I don't know. I would say I've lucked out. I landed on my feet there. That worked quite well. Because before this, I guess I was doing, like, freelance journalism, and I was, like, a production assistant for film and TV stuff. So I kind of always liked, like, helping put together the stuff, you know, and at the end you have the end product, and you're like, we helped make that. But I don't, ironically, I was never really like, oh, I want to be in the middle of that and have everybody be looking at my face. So
right.
Maybe that was an error of judgment. But, yeah, I'm not sure. I guess we don't know how this is going to go, so we'll just keep trying to do this for as long as it seems right, and then I don't know, probably going back to trying to do the film and TV stuff. I think I always thought like documentaries was maybe where I kind of wanted to end up, just, you know, research guy on a documentary. I'd be fine with that. That would be pretty nice.
Are you taking any footage on the while you're doing this tour at all?
We take bits and bobs here and there, but we were kind of talking about, I was thinking about the other day, maybe like when we kind of go back home, I was like, it'd be good just to take like, you know, DSLR, GoPro, whatever, into the studio and just like keep like loading it up onto something, and then however many years later, then we can make something out of it.
Go back.
Because I guess whenever you see those band documentaries, you're like, oh, having the foresight to have thought to document that, maybe that's the smart thing. So, yeah, I don't know.
And you're going to Vegas tomorrow?
We are. We are driving overnight to Vegas, but I've never been.
Let me tell you, it's the best representation of America.
Okay.
It's fun. You know, it's... I don't know what to compare it to. I mean, I don't know... I honestly don't know what the UK equivalent of it is. I don't think there's really anything...
Yeah, maybe it's kind of one of itself, but I don't know. I watched some footage around the last American election of the last Republican rallies, so I feel like I might have seen the dark side.
Well,
of
it's funny because it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of city, but most people identify the Strip as ultimately being what Las Vegas is. I mean, like the rest
is
of the
Britney season. Britney Spears, is she still there?
I think she might still be there.
Not like I'm like, I don't
know. No, I mean, you don't know.
Her.
I mean, you know.
It's
you
not like I'm gonna like phone her up and be like, hey. But I just wondered because I think that's why I associate with, I suppose, the massive casinos, the Strip, and the residencies.
Yeah, it's just 24 hours a day. It's blingy. It's loud. It's people. People have a Vegas mode setting, where they're like, I can do whatever I want. Like, it's a lot of that.
So I should wear a helmet.
You should wear a helmet and riot gear. But okay. It's you know, I don't know how to prepare you for it. It's. The food's really good. If you like good food.
That's like those kind of backhanded compliments. Like I was talking about this with a friend the other day, and we were like, he was really good at the game, to be fair, about kind of backhanded compliments that you can give people or they've given you when you come off stage, but they obviously didn't like it, but you're trying to find something positive
to say. Yes. I love this game. Oh, okay, what'd you come up with?
my favorite one that he came up with was, I saw you up there.
I haven't heard that one. That's my favorite.
And I should credit that because that's not my joke. But it was that guy, Michael Azarad, the music journalist guy. He runs a website called The Talk House, which I sometimes write for. So he came to our show in New York, and we were having a wee chat afterwards. And he's a lovely man, like completely everything that you would hope. So wise, so sage, but very funny. And this game was top notch. I was like, this isn't the first time he's played this. Surely he's so good at it. And if anyone brings up tone, be like, your guitar tone,
really good.
Like, you things have changed a lot. You guys have come changed.
I gotta say, the shapes of your guitars were so cool. Where did you get those?
Yeah. Or then my favorite one, which probably won't come across on the podcast, is just like pointing at somebody and then kind of miming their instrument whilst nodding and smiling and be like, and then we were all laughing about it for like 15 minutes, and then I think there was probably a slow dawning realization where we were like, people wrote that, that's definitely happened. It's definitely happened to me. And you're like, oh, the joke's not funny anymore.
No, or, well, with my thing, it's a lot of, you're so brave. I could never get up there and do that. I could never do that.
Well, and you're like, does that imply, you're like, that implies that it was really, like, I was very brave to come out of that in one piece because it went so badly.
No, it's there's people, like, if they don't, like, if you have a bad set and they don't know what to say, it's just basically, they're saying, like, I could never do stand-up. I mean, it's hard, you know, like, it's sort of, where they're almost kind of, they're kind of acknowledging that it, I mean, thankfully, this has not happened in a really long time, but it has happened, and they do sort of point out, like, the, hey, look, or, I guess it's different, because they'll go, I don't know what was wrong with the crowd. I mean, I thought it was great. And I've had people say that before when the show actually went okay, and I was like, well, I felt okay about it before, but now...
Oh,
now I'm all in my head about it.
I was watching the other day. I don't know what. Like, recently I've been watching a lot of on tour documentaries whilst on tour.
Sure.
Which I'm like, oh, this is kind of meta what we're doing here. But I watched Mistaken for Strangers the other day, the national thing. And there's a bit where I don't think they've had some technical problems. And the singer's just in the bathroom washing his face and being like, oh God, what a shit show. And his brother's filming him and he's like, why? What's wrong? What's wrong with you? What's wrong? Oh, I didn't think it was that bad. Is that, oh, where's it going? And it's just like making it so much worse. Just, oh, cringe. So awful.
Yeah, Matt Berninger, when he was on the, he told us.
Oh, he was on the podcast.
He was on the podcast.
I should have taken that down when I looked there. I was like, oh, see, that's what I mean. Like, he was on the podcast.
He was, yes. Take two.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
But I thought that, like, before I had watched that, I guess I was like, I think it was really nice, really, really better that they left it that way. It was like, if they tried to make it a kind of, like, shiny, PR-friendly, like, yeah. Oh, great band, great tour, isn't this all very profound, then it would have probably just been kind of run-the-mill tour documentary. But I was like, when you were watching it, I was like, yeah, it's about the band, but it's about, like, families and relationships and stuff. And you can totally tell the dynamic. It doesn't matter what they're doing now, but that's still the dynamic, where he's like, you didn't prepare anything. Stop being such a, like, completely disorganized little brother. And you're like, they just totally know each other so well, but totally at the end of the tether with the stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he just basically shot all that footage and then just made it.
Just so, like, yeah, so many cringe bits, so many, like, really cringe bits where you're like, oh, ground, swallow me. But
yeah. I feel like UK sensibilities are much more gravitate toward the cringe moments in entertainment.
Yeah,
because
we gave you Ricky Gervais.
You gave us Ricky Gervais, and you also gave us Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yes. Oh yeah, so much cringe to be had. I wonder what it is about the British people.
Guess is, and obviously I'm not British, so I don't know, but my guess is that there's a certain way that you conduct yourself socially.
It's very apologetic.
And also, and so, you know, when someone comes out of a situation and creates those moments, it's like one of the biggest violations of social conduct you could possibly have. So it's fun to watch, because you could never do, you would hopefully never do that.
I hope so. But maybe is that the fantasy mode where you're like, imagine being that inappropriate. I can't imagine that.
Yeah. But, I think with that in America, just be like, oh, fuck, look at that guy. Like, that's how we approach everything.
Oh, maybe. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, Ian from the band's always like, you take such pleasure in awkwardness. I'm like, I don't think. And he's like, but when it's happening, you're like, oh, it's happening.
Look,
like,
at this.
Let's point it out. But I'm like, but we're all aware. So in a way, I'm like, okay, maybe it's just easier to, you know, cauterize the wound and be like, oh, this is really uncomfortable. That's awkward what we've done there. Let's just collectively move on.
Hey, let me
but
ask you a question.
Said, we have to ignore it. I'm like, but I think just shine a light on it and then carry on.
And then move on. Yes. Just burn it out real fast.
But was, you know, I was like, if we just stay there wondering about it, like, tragedy plus comedy. No, yeah.
Tragedy plus time.
Plus joke. There should be joke in there.
Yeah. I always think that formula is actually distance plus time. No, I'm sorry. Tragedy plus distance. I think it's tragedy plus distance. And I think time is a form of distance. The distance between two events.
And I suppose there needs to be a joke, because it's not like just after a certain amount of time you're like, ha, that was funny.
Yeah.
You're like, no, you have to, like, make something.
Because if you threw a boomerang in someone's face, it wouldn't be very funny.
No.
But if that guy was like a mile away and he was really small and you just went, and then like a minute later you just saw, and then you saw him fall down. It's really funny. So I think tragedy plus distance is funny, and distance is a form, and time is a form of distance.
It's all getting very
very
intense.
I don't mean to break it down too much. I'll do that. I'll bore the shit out of you, Lauren. When you do two shows back to back in the same city, are you doing the same set? Are you mixing it up, or how do you make your shows
long enough? Is that where you're going?
No, I mean,
with this?
How do you?
There's only one record. It's true.
I know, but how do you make your do you mix up the orders, or do you do different covers, or how do you make it? How do you present a new show every night, night after night, when you're, you know, like, how do you do that?
Well, at the moment, we don't really play the covers. I'm sorry.
That's right.
What you've come for. But
just come for the one cover.
But yeah, I guess we kind of, we play the record in a couple of B-sides. And I guess we kind of approach it in the same way as we did with the album. Like, you know, you have to sequence it so there's an ebb and flow and things go nicely. So it took us a while to kind of find a rhythm with that. So it depends what length of set we have to do. So we've got a certain number of sets that we would do depending on those. But yeah, I think we're quite nerdy about that stuff in terms of like the way we sequenced the record.
Mm-hmm.
We did it so that Ian especially is a massive vinyl head.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, it needs to be like side A and side B. And that's how it should work. So then if people want to get the vinyl, then it'll work on vinyl and then it'll translate on CD. And then it'll... Yeah, and then I felt a bit, I was like, no one tell them that we live in a culture where, like, people just download one song. They only want the song with the "oh" bit in it. They don't want, you know, but I was like, I think that's nice, because I was like, then you're covering all your bases. And I think you can, you know, when you get an album and it's just, like, front-loaded with what were obviously the written for radio singles, and then a bunch of other stuff. I'm like, like, maybe that works, but I guess I was like, but that's not essentially pretentious, but I guess that's not where we come from. As musicians, we want to make, like, your album is your whole piece of work that you've made. So why would you like front load everything, and then if they get bored, then they don't have to listen to the rest.
That's right.
It's a terrible idea.
But it is interesting that the more you do these types of thing, these shows, the more you start to feel like, and it's amazing how universal it can be, where something in one city has a specific vibe to it, and it'll work in another city and another city. I think it's really cool. I think it just means that there are some certain types of universal truths when it comes to entertainment.
I think so. Plus, I guess, again, this probably sounds very pretentious. Maybe that's just a disclaimer for the whole thing.
No, I understand.
But I guess for me, I was like, the cool thing for us is that we've traveled so many different places, but the songs and the set can still communicate with people. And I was like, I guess that's about communicating with people in a kind of visceral, emotional way.
Sure.
Like, that's how they it'll bounce back, and like the culture can be completely different, and you could be playing in Orlando, fingers crossed that'll work well, and people will still respond in the same way to the same parts in the set, which is quite interesting.
Yeah,
it's kind of social study.
How do you know that you've done it? Like, what do you need to happen for you to feel like you did a good show?
I don't know. I guess it's kind of a weird one where you personally kind of had a bad show, but then afterwards people can be like, it was a great gig, but you're always like, you know, critiquing it in your head. You're like, well, I didn't like that bit was a bit, you could have done that better. But I guess audience response is always very helpful, because you can, I guess it's kind of a loop. You see that people are having a good time, and then you can kind of be like, okay, everything's going fine, everyone's enjoying it, that's fine. But never look anyone in the eye. Never do that, because then you just get trapped. You're in this tractor beam and you can't get out.
You're trying to figure out what are they experiencing, yeah. What are they seeing?
And there was a really lovely moment where a few months ago there was a guy that was standing directly in front of Ian, and Ian would kind of go forward and play bass, and every time he would go forward, this guy would just like completely freak out, and he was like just totally like body slamming off like the barrier and things, and he was just like shaking his hands to the heavens, and the range took some video of it and put it on Instagram, and I was watching afterwards, and I was like, that's so nice, but it was so like, I caught it at the wrong point, and in my head I was like, that's really funny, like it's so like I was like, that's so nice, but just the way he's doing it was so funny, and I was like, don't look at him, and I'm like, oh, can't now, I can't go over there, because I'm gonna like, just, you know, when you get fixated on it, mm-hmm. and then you're like, don't laugh about that, that's not funny.
Mm-mm.
And I'm like, oh no, it's gonna happen,
not publicly,
but again, I was like, that's so nice that he's that invested in it, that he was just swept away. But it's really good that it's on Instagram, because now I can
but
look
really
at
funny.
It and
now
be
you
like,
can laugh about
oh,
it privately. Yeah.
Yeah,
now you can, you don't have to laugh about it
but
publicly.
But it was so nice.
That's great.
Very funny.
Well, I don't want to take up all your time. We just talked for an hour.
Sweet.
Can you believe that?
Flew by.
Come on.
And you didn't even ask, like, why do you have the V name? Because you knew already. You didn't ask me the what's it like to be a girl in the band question.
What's it like to be a girl? People ask you that?
Yeah, I made a joke I thought was... This is why you do your job and I do mine, who I thought was a funny joke about that the other day, and the response was, oh.
What was the joke?
Well, somebody was like, what's the difference being a girl in a band and being a guy in a band? And I was like, periods. Because I was like, surely this is a really stupid question. Will we not pass this? And then the poor woman on the phone went, oh.
I think that's hilarious.
I was like, oh no, she's not. She's probably not going to put it in because it's going to make her uncomfortable.
You know, that person was wrong.
So...
I don't think I would have asked that question, but if I had asked that question and you had said that, I would have been absolutely delighted.
So maybe this is about our audience. No, you know, you have to gauge the audience before you put the joke out.
Here's the thing. You're in the right... You're in your humor tribe right now. So
this helps.
You don't have to worry about it. If you're talking to, like, serious music journalists...
Then
they're
like,
just, what? What is that supposed to mean? Well, I don't know. I was just fucking around.
She seemed obsessed with periods, Mabry said.
Was
like,
she
oh,
on
no.
her period? I don't know. She kept talking about it.
She seemed very emotional. Other plus other female stereotypes.
Jesus Christ. Oh my God.
I am very... Oh no, I talked about crying during films earlier, how much I get so emotional about everything. So.
Oh no, 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 no.
Oh,
no.
No.
I, you
oh,
know,
no.
Here's the problem.
I've got
I'm gonna ultimately be a crier in movies, and I know I'm going to get there because my dad, even up until the day he died, he was in his 70s, he fucking cried at every movie.
Just got to give yourself over to it. Just let it happen.
I don't mean just like tear trickling down his face. Like if you were watching King Kong and King Kong falls off the building, all of a sudden you'd hear, like, and you look over like, Dad, come on. It's a fucking giant gorilla. He's not.
Aww. But in a way, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's important to experience the range of emotions, you know? The completely crying laughter and the completely crying, I guess. Never Let Me Go. Never watch that again. Oh, dear.
No, my God, oh. That movie.
Oh. But it's the closing, like, soliloquy where she's like, at the end of the day, everybody just wanted a little bit more time. And I'm like,
You know, the heart of the... And then you just fucking know it's coming because...
Tommy's going down. They're Tommy living, is not they're, sticking around.
They're all having a great time, and it's like, oh, they're getting drunk and having sex and eating food. Yeah, and it's
they
like,
all made up, they sorted out their personal problems, and that's it.
And gone. Piece by piece.
But I thought I really enjoyed it, but then afterwards I was like, I won't never watch that again. That would be the end. Blue Valentine, no, never again.
Yeah,
no.
If you know, that's... I take movies really... I mean, like, I'm very empathetic in the way where I just, like, I'm a fucking emotional sponge. So whatever is going on in the thing, I'll just absorb it. And I will not, if I go on a, like, if I were to go on a date with a girl.
Don't go,
like,
see Blue Valentine. That'd be awful.
And I'm like, can we see, like, Dumb and Dumber? You know, like, yeah. I wouldn't be.
I had to, like, at the end of that film, I was like, I need to convince myself that I was, like, I kept being, like, it's the end of the film, but it doesn't mean it's the end of the story. So, you know, like, maybe, like, everyone was fine. Like, they all figured it out in their own way, and it doesn't mean they were together. It was just, like, it definitely got better, though, right? Didn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't it?
Or maybe there were some other people somewhere, and then they overcame it somehow.
Or the, it's not real. It's not real. Like, no, either of those.
I'm not here. This isn't happening.
Yeah. You just Michael Stipe.
How to disappear.
Just chant it over and over again, like some kind of CBT mantra. Like, yeah. That was a heavy note to leave it on.
No, I think it was a good note to leave it on. All
right.
I think it was a nice dismount. Because you're about when do you go on tonight?
We're on 10:15, I think.
10:15. Okay, great.
Yeah, we have to go sound check and all that. And apparently, I didn't know this until earlier today, this is the venue that is the inside of the Silencio in Mulholland Drive.
Really?
Apparently.
The Tower Theatre.
Apparently so.
Yeah, your manager was like, they're not really, it's like, they don't really usually have bands
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I think we were trying to find a place to do an extra gig because yesterday's one sold out pretty quickly. So, yeah, we kind of come full circle.
Yeah.
So we talked about at the start. But we were just trying to find a space and we were like, oh, just like a small kind of grimy club show.
Gorgeous
a lot
inside.
Of places were kind of booked up and these people kindly stepped forward. So I'll try and not, maybe they try and not make the show too lynchy. Kind of dancing scary, trippy midgets.
Yeah.
Quite a weird dream sequence.
But you don't dance, though, because people are say you should dance more.
Well, maybe I'll channel that. Or just kind of... Oh, no, I was going to make a horrible Laura Palmer joke, but I don't think that'd be very nice.
Why? It's fine.
Laying prostate on the ground with, like, a little sheet. And then that's how we start the show. Somebody takes a plastic sheet off.
Oh, my God. If you started the show Twin Peaks style, legendary.
That would be pretty... Well, apparently, I think Bastille started their show with the Twin Peaks theme tune.
Oh, they did?
Yeah,
so
because we were playing in Houston, and there's a thing there called Twin Peaks, which is like Hooters, kind of.
Yeah.
But like,
No.
And I was very confused because I was like, "Oh, Twin Peaks is that like a themed?" And then the label rep that was with us was like, "You don't want to go in there." And it's basically like Hooters, but they wear like little kind of cropped, you know, like flannel shirt, kind of like Kyle's shirt here, but
yeah,
with,
Kyle likes to take his cans out every once in a while.
And you know, more power to them. Do what they want to do. Feminism is about supporting people doing what they want to do, being themselves.
But
at the same time, I'm like, guys, no. Oh, geez.
Okay. No, I think a tit themed restaurant called Twin Peaks. I'm going to say less power to them.
Yeah. And we were playing this festival, and on the screen at the back of it, you could just see this advert kept going around. It would be like, join all these things, advertising, and then Twin Peaks. And I made a joke about it on stage where I was like, I really need to, this is the last song because I need to leave because I can't see that ever again because it's making me really unhappy, but good luck with that. And then right after we finished on this flip stage, Bastille started right afterwards, and they started their set with the Twin Peaks theme tune. I got really like irrationally angry because I thought it was people from the festival making fun of me.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, you think it's funny? Oh, assholes. It's like, not funny. Oh, no, it's somebody else.
That's what it is.
Yep. And then Ian was like, climb down, you're shouting quite loudly. Like, there's no need. But yeah, sorry Bastille, I didn't know.
I want to come to the show tonight
and you'll get to see it.
I would love to see the show.
That would be good fun. Then hopefully you can get all the Lynchy references.
Yeah, I will, absolutely.
Maybe it'll go down even worse than my Star Wars references.
No.
Could it be even worse than that? I don't know.
No, those people were wrong.
They were wrong. It was funny. Anyway,
not every, you know.
Plus, I thought that maybe I dressed up as a Jawa last Halloween, so and we put it on the internet. So I assumed that the kids who followed us on the internet, they would know. They would get us. They would get us. And hey, you laugh. It took a lot of planning because I don't like to buy a pre-made costume.
Right.
I don't want to do that. It's cheating.
No, it's cheating.
So, well, not, you know, if people want to do that's fine. But I guess I was like, I'm a creative person. I can do this. but we were on tour and we got home like on the 31st. So I just bought a number of ingredients and sent them to a friend and he had to open them and check that they were viable. So kind of brown monk's cloak. And what I think is quite racistly termed, by the way, Amazon, Mexican shooter belt.
Okay.
Like once.
Sure. Yeah. No.
And then some bike lights, some orange bike lights, and then a hockey mask, spray painted black. Put the lights kind of on the outside and then black gaffer tape in them so they were shaped like the eyes.
You know, what's great about that is that it's an easy to make costume, but
no one bothers you.
But it looks like you put a lot of work into it,
mm-hmm.
and it's original.
And it was good fun. And we went to a club night, and flashing bike lights for eyes are great during that kind of experience. And I went with Martin, and we went into a club in Glasgow, and I guess now because we're in context in Glasgow all the time,
yeah.
So we get people talk to us a lot more there. But I was like, this is a really weird, like, flip experience where nobody spoke to me the whole time because I was a Jawa. Nobody
yeah, they
knew.
Wouldn't know. It's the perfect
and then
costume.
Martin was like, you're not going to help me out. I'm like, nope. I'm going to get the drinks and you're going to deal with it. So, yeah, it was nice.
Are you going to do
like,
Halloween this year?
Well, we're playing a Pitchfork Festival in Paris on Halloween.
Oh.
So we need to. I was like, we need to have a powwow because I feel like it needs to be a group endeavor.
Yeah.
Last year we played. The night before we played in Oslo, I think, and Ian's really good artist, and he did some kind of death metal corpse paint on us, and it was very intricate, and it was really good. And then after we played, people were like, it's not really a big deal here. I was like, oh, crap, like, we just like, spent ages making this. So, yeah, I feel like we need to choose something that will work as a unit.
Supernatural? You could whoop out your Castiel cosplay?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I would just like, would I be Sam or Dean looking angsty? What, at what point are they going to find a demon they need to, like, the only way it can be neutralized is by, like, them taking their tops off? Like, I feel like, I'm like, that's, there was one scene I was like, I like this program, but I see what they're doing here, where Sam was in the shower and Dean had come back, like, and you could hear them talking through the motel door, but then Sam comes out to be like, what? Dad, what? And he's got a low slung towel around his waist and hasn't even dried his torso. And I was like, I have never left a bathroom like that in my life. But at the same time, I was like, fair enough. Fair enough.
I feel like I could rock the Dean cosplay, okay? Because we have the same coloring.
And you, yeah, your shirt's off. Sammy!
Sam!
Oh, Sam, I was getting into scrapes.
Those crazy supernatural scrapes and their devil dealings and whatnot. Know.
Plus, it seems that every costume I've come up with so far that's been suggested, Martin's been like, yep, you can't be wearing a mask, you can't have something over your mouth. And I'm like, crap! All the good ideas. So,
why are these rules being placed on you?
Well, I feel like if we're actually playing a gig, because I was like, I want to be Bane. That was my main excitement. And I was like, because I would really enjoy that, and wouldn't it be great fun, and it would be hilarious when we were doing all the press. But then they were like, yeah, think about when you were singing with the over your mouth, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, but if it was like a little talk box thing that you could...
Yeah.
Hello, Los Angeles. You know, like that's.
And then try and sing through it and just sound like a really old version of me.
That, for Halloween, that would be fucking awesome.
Plus, now we need to do our geographical research in advance. Was that. I assume it was massive in France because it was massive everywhere, but would they get the reference?
I think they would. I think they would get Bane.
Or maybe I need to just research.
Bonjour, Paris!
Marion Cotillard, she was in that. They're probably not going to like that if I'm like, oh. I know a person from France. Like, you know, when people are like, oh,
yeah, I know
you're Canadian, you must know, I heard somebody say that, they're like, oh, like, when we were playing a festival in Canada, and people were like, oh, do you know Tegan and Sarah? To, like, one of the gig reps, and I'm like, that would be a reach, but, like, they all know each other, and people
also
like,
been on the podcast.
I listened to that one, and it was awesome.
They're great.
They're in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Today, I think. Today and yesterday.
They're so great.
Love them an awful lot. They're... Well,
I'm glad that we were able to trap your soul on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You have been amazing.
Well, thank you. We got there.
We did.
I was worried.
This makes me so happy. You have no idea. Like, just a week ago, seeing the tweet.
We turned it around.
We made some jokes via DM, and you're very funny.
Thank you. We did emojis.
We did emoji, which was great, and it's nice. I'm very happy for your success, and I sincerely hope you take time to enjoy it.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it'll be good. We're having a good time. And I think when we've got a little minute at Christmas time to sit down, maybe we'll just have a pint in Glasgow and be like, holy shit, that happened.
Well, it all goes by so fast that you really, even if you have difficulty absorbing the moment as it's happening, because obviously you have to focus on other things, you have to focus on the show, you have sound check, you know, you got to get to the next town. At least at some point, I used to do this thing at the end of every year where I would just sort of write all the things that happened that I was really thankful for, just so I had a list.
Yeah, keep making sure you appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just to take that moment and go, oh, I got to do this and this and this, and I did this, and I got better in this area, and I was nicer in this area, and I did this less, and, you know, here's some more stuff to work on, you know. Yeah. But I think it's good, because this is, you know, you look back at this time and be like, oh my God, that was so amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe I'll make a list, and then I'll have a big beer afterwards. And I'll be like, I achieved a lot. Well done, us.
Yay, me.
Yeah.
All right, excellent. Would you do the honor of signing us off?
With the burrito?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Please.
This was the Nerdist Podcast. Enjoy your burrito.
Yes!
Yes!
We did it!
I feel like that was a moment.
That was a special moment. That was a special moment that makes you now part of the Nerdist expanded universe. You're canon now.
It's like 6 degrees of Nerdist bacon.
Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.